morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I have someone I always enjoy interviewing because I think she's so smart and she's so nice and she's so concerned about everything that goes on within the county, but also within the city. And she has got a beautiful, what is that baby, 1 year old now? How old is that baby?
No, we just hit 8 months.
8 months.
Yeah.
How time flies. And so her name is Dina Guiel-Ampiasi. She's on the city council. I don't hold that against her. Everybody's entitled to a mistake. One of the things I really like about Dina as a politician, there's so many things I like about Dina, but Dina as a city councilor, she is always prepared. She comes in, she studies, and we'll talk a little bit about that. I know I'm hearing rumbles in the community that such and so, and Kevin Sherman, who I believe is a tremendous loss to the city of Pittsfield, will not be running again. I'm already hearing people who think they want to run for city council. Listen to these shows. Listen to Dina, the preparation. It's almost like a second full-time job. So without further ado, foie gras, soup du jour, my friend and city councilor, Dina Guiel-Ampiasi, how are you doing, kiddo?
I'm good.
Good.
It's good. There's a lot to be thankful for this year, especially for your little one.
Yeah, yep, me too. I got a new grandbaby. Going to be looking forward to that Christmas, I can tell you that.
He's beautiful. Congratulations to your family.
He's the light of our life right now and probably for the next several years. Hey, listen, lots going on in the city. I guess the real kick in the teeth was the loss of the trash recycling place and the distribution, the elimination of it, burning it. Are we moving ahead with that at all?
As a city, we have to make some decisions and we have to start moving forward. There are conversations happening, but formally right now, we haven't made any decisions. I do expect, though, that in the next, now it's going to have to be the next year of the council, we're going to have to hit the ground running on this.
Yeah. And in fairness to everybody, this just didn't come up, but it's been one of these things, and I call it the Pittsfield parochialism. We've always put whatever we wanted out on the side of the road and they've always picked it up. And I don't think in today's day and age that we can continue to do that. I don't think it's going to be an easy fix. I thought it was an easy fix a few years back when we talked about toters, because I've lived all over the country, all over the world, but in places that we still visit, they have the toters and they love them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've lived places with toters. I have family across the state that has toters. And when we are having those conversations,
yeah,
I was reaching out to the different people in my family and friends of different ages, different physical abilities, to ask them if they like their toters. And overwhelmingly, I heard back positive things.
Yeah.
Pittsfield didn't embrace the idea of it. Unfortunately, I don't think that any solution that we come up with is going to be embraced by 70 or 80% of our population out of the gate. But when we get into the groove of it, reverting back to the old system, people will finally have to come around to that idea, right? Like, right. And once they're in it for a few years, they'll look back and they'll say, I don't want to go back to that. This is better.
Right.
But sometimes it takes some time. And I think that's the role of government. You have to make difficult decisions.
Yeah.
For your community's best interest, and you have to consider a lot of different things, but those decisions are not always popular.
No, they're not. And Pittsfield is very parochial. My hat goes off to Joe Curtis when he talks about condensing schools. You think the trash pickup was a big deal? Trust me. I can remember, when the when the GE left, I heard for probably 6 or 7 years, they're coming back. They'll be back. Don't worry. They're coming back. It's pretty obvious now they're tearing the buildings down. They're not coming back. But right. I don't envy anybody on the council. You're right. I think regardless of what you come up with as a solution, we just have to learn new ways. And hopefully we have enough new people in the city that or younger people who will accept the new ways.
Yeah, and I think part of that parochialism that you just touched on, particularly in the case of the school buildings, you know, residents that have lived here their whole lives and gone to these small elementary schools in their neighborhoods, they have these fond memories, right? Yeah. And the idea of their child going across town or to a different school, it's a whole different community shape when you think about it that way. And I think that's what's scary is, you know, change, like fundamentally change is difficult, like we've talked about.
Yeah, I walked to school until I went to PHS.
How far was your walk?
Well, probably, but here was the thing. I went to St. Charles.
Okay.
In grammar, through the seventh grade. We walked to in the morning. We walked to school. We walked home for lunch. We walked back. And we walked. So it probably was over a mile.
Yeah.
That's you know? Great. Yeah, it was. I mean, we didn't have a lot of fat kids in the class. I can tell you that. I think you're right, Dina. I think me to you and everybody that I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I don't mean to be a criticism, but they could have presented the toters in a better way. If I remember correctly, it was one size fits all, and the size was 60 or 90 gallons. I wouldn't be able to park my car in my garage if I put that in there.
Right. When you drive around town and you look at the number of single car garages that are not spacious at that, it's truly meant for one small car.
Yeah.
That presents a different conversation. It really does. And I think, too, another part of it is households figuring out, does this live in our garage? Do we get some kind of, you know, enclosure outside of the garage for it, right? Figuring out a path for it, all of those things. It's a much bigger planning and conversation.
And with my wife and I, very rarely, you know, maybe at a holiday time or a party time, we're not going to have a need for 90 gallons. And as I walk in the neighborhood here all the time, right. I look at houses that for their week's trash, they have a little white kitchen bag out there.
Yeah.
That's it for the week. So I think that was one of the things. And it's not a criticism. It's just an observation and something to learn from. We have to be more flexible with the different sizes, I guess. I know it's a problem we have to solve, though, because it's going to get real costly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what did you think about the retirement of Chief Wynn?
I'm excited for him to go on to his next chapter. You know, he's had a long time in service for him and his family. I think it's a great time. Yeah.
I do, too. And I think he has stepped up to the plate, served the city well. Served the Commonwealth well. He's very well respected. I wish him the very best for him and his family.
He absolutely has. He should be very proud of his time serving here in Pittsfield, and we were lucky to have him.
Yeah, we were. And so I guess as I sit back and look, we're going into a new year. We have a lot of things that we have to deal with. Basically, you, not me. I just sit there and yell at the television until my wife shuts it off. Because she told me, you know, you can yell as loud as you want. They're not going to hear you, but the neighbors will. So I don't know what she meant by that. What do you think the biggest challenges coming facing the three biggest facing the city right now?
It feels like every time we talk, we do discuss this garbage situation. Yeah. But it is truly one of our biggest issues that we have to deal with. And that's become particularly clear in the last year with the closing of the Covanta and the recycling and the things that have changed, right? We have a new set of circumstances that we have to deal with. So I would say garbage is on the list. The fallout of the COVID pandemic and what that is going to do to our budget moving forward. I think there are many unforeseen consequences that we may not quite be seeing the shape of yet.
Right.
It feels like we're out of it, but financially, you know, things kind of run a year or two behind anyway. So that's something that's on my mind. And, you know, outside of that, it would really be the development of our small businesses and of our downtown. We've seen some shift from the last couple of years. We've seen some businesses leave. And that's not anything new to Pittsfield. It feels like every time we get on our feet and we start running, we fall back a little bit, and there seems to be this cyclical nature of it. And I think a really important part of getting ahead of this is attracting more medium-sized businesses. Small will come with the medium size, I believe. I'm not a big fan of looking for that huge employer. We don't want to go back to the days of GE.
No.
But if we can have a diverse economy of different types, and not too big, but giving people really good jobs here in Pittsfield, that's going to help our small businesses solidify and stay because people have money to go to them.
That's it. And I'm started and I will do it today also. Please shop locally through the holiday season and especially through what I call the tunnel months. January, February, and March, when so many people have gone to Florida or whatever, our small businesses really need to have you shopping with them. Same with the restaurants. COVID really took its toll on the city and on small businesses and restaurants. Excuse me. But I hope that, and I know we try to just support the local men and women who have businesses here,
excuse me.
I probably gave you a call over the phone. I got one.
It's very tempting to fall into, the web orders and, it really is. But I'll tell you, I just had some pictures framed for the house and I went to Miller Art.
Yeah.
The matting's done and we did them right. And they look absolutely beautiful, and Steve Miller did an incredible job.
He's an amazing guy. I love
it. And it was, I was so close to just ordering the mats online and doing it myself. The finished product is far better. I trusted that he knew what he was doing through the process. And not only that, but you have that interaction of somebody in your community and you really get to know their business and respect their art. And it's not just for places like Miller Art Supply, but it's even like the small boutiques where you can get your Christmas presents and things like that. It takes a little more time, but you end up walking away with such a more special experience.
I really believe that. We had a party for my son and his wife, and Roseanne she wanted Berkshire stuff, So she bought all this stuff like from Soma's Aromas and the people that came, they came from New York and the South, and they all loved that stuff.
Yeah.
It was the Berkshires.
Right.
You had those, 411 shirts from the Berkshire. They're so unique.
Yeah.
Right. It's going into Ginger, Dory and Ginger. I like going in there. I like going into Steve Eleni. Local people. Just slugging it out every day.
Right.
And I think we need to stop dilly-dallying with the relocation and the building of a new police station. That should go to the top of the list. It shouldn't. I understand they said it's going to cost this and cost that. Well, today with technology, probably, and as soon as you put it in, it'll be outdated. So,
right.
But where the station is now is not good for anybody. The building is horrible, and the location is worse.
Bill, that's a really important one. And to be honest with you, I probably should have included that in my top three. It's another one of those that we keep kicking the can down the road.
Yeah.
And I understand the members of the community that are afraid of the price tag. I understand a lot of the arguments
that
are made. However, the reality is we have a police station that was built in, what was it, 1930?
In the 30s.
Right.
Yeah.
The world today does not look like it did back then. The rooms are too small. It doesn't have the infrastructure for the technology. We have mold. It's just not a place that the people who are serving our city should have to go to work every day, much less the people who experience a horrific crime and they go somewhere for help and they're walking into this building that, you know, we can do better. We can do a lot better.
And there's so many other reasons. It was built in an era where everything was built around the hub.
Right.
You know, that the city hall used to be the post office. The bank used to be the city hall. My father worked for 38 years as a Pittsfield firefighter, and he was stationed at headquarters for a long time. But that now is because of the world and because of 9/11, because of a lot of things. Things have to be spread out. They have to be more diverse. They have the hub thought is gone.
So from your public safety experience and mindset, the reason why the hub is problematic is because if there were a situation in that area, we're then left defenseless. Is that the thing?
You have to remember these are all target buildings, and they're soft targets. And the world today is crazy. I mean, what is it? Two places now I read, one in the Carolinas and one in, I believe it was Oregon, their power stations were knocked out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we have to, it's nice to say, well, you know, that's over there or they're having, I don't want to go politics. I really don't. But let's just say the facts. They have reported that there are 1 million gotaways from the crossed over the border and did not turn themselves in and got away from Border Patrol. Now, I'm not the brightest guy in the world, and I know a lot of you are saying, you're right about that. But I will tell you, if I'm going to go across the border, get captured by the Border Patrol, given a cell phone, a goodie bag, and flown to a destination of where I have friends, I'm going to surrender. I'm not going to run away and hide. The people who run away and hide, they're here for other reasons, or they have awful backgrounds.
You know, the attacks on municipal government that we've seen across the country, it's something that you don't think will happen to your community until it does.
That's right.
And when it does, if it does, you know, small government is small government. It takes a lot to get back on your feet, and we want to avoid those things as much as possible. But also, I think in building a new police station, we can think about what more could we be using it for. You know, it's wonderful that when we have large community events or when a mayor wants to speak to the public, we go into these other widely used community spaces, right? Yep. Whether it be Zion or some other place, maybe a high school. But maybe there's room for a congregating place at a police station, like a community center. Maybe we could think creatively about this. Like, it can mean more to us than just policing. It can be a place to bring people together.
I believe it can, and it can also have classrooms for the public. And run, you know, there's so many. Law enforcement has changed so dramatically, its role, protect and serve. But that both of those, protect is expanded, serve has expanded, and I understand there's the people are going to say, you know, abolish the police. Well, think about that, because who are you going to call, Ghostbusters? Because none of us are immune from crime.
Right.
We, you know, we could be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Who knows?
You know, I was very happy to hear at the last council meeting, Chief Wynn shared that they've really ramped up the recruiting efforts, and
yes, they have. Yeah.
And we have several new recruits, and for all the things that we are asking the police department to do,
yep,
the only way that we get there is to have more bodies, right? Whether it be more social workers or more actual police officers, we need more bodies doing these jobs. And increasing our recruitment is the first step there. And for several years, we found it really difficult to do that. So it's incredibly promising that he's been able to do that in his last term.
I agree 100%. The other two things, Dean, I would like the council and the mayor and the powers to be think about is how much longer can we stay in a broken system called civil service? You know, if somebody quits, we can't wait 2 years, a year, 18 months, 60 to replace them. It's just too expensive. And in a plea, I've had this argument till I'm blue in the face. The police have to have so many people on each shift. There it is.
Yeah.
And if the bodies aren't there, then they have to overtime people. And everybody says, yeah, but look at the money they're making. Trust me when I tell you, mandatory overtime takes its toll. And you have family life, you have family issues, you have exhaustion. These are not low stress jobs. And I just can't. And if somebody can convince me, which would take a lot of convincing, that they can bring civil service up to speed, I'd say fine. But right now, I don't see it. I really don't see it.
I mean, I would agree with you. In our community, we've seen that civil service does not work. There may be places where it does, but it doesn't work here. And to your point about mandatory overtime, the widespread fallout of what that means, right? So you are creating dysfunction within the person when you're doing all of that mandatory overtime. So their family life is going to be affected. And then that's going to roll over to their work life and how they're responding on the scene. And some of these situations that we've seen, whether we're talking about local situations or across the country, in order to avoid those, we need people showing up at their best.
That's right?
We need people as sharp as they can be, well-rested and able to show up, making the best decisions for that moment. And the mandatory overtime is something that absolutely has to go. And also when the argument about how much money they're making doing that, that's two-sided, right? So you have people that are upset about the budget and how much overtime we're spending, but they also don't want to properly staff. So that's kind of a catch-22. And then you also have just the pure fact that we're spending that much more money and we don't have it to spend.
Right.
We need to draw it back. But, you know, part of this whole puzzle that I feel goes missed in so many conversations is the fact that, you know, so much of our workforce has retired in the last several years.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the narratives that I know I hear often is people just don't want to work. Well, that's not really the issue that we're seeing, whether we're talking about these specialized fields, or even your clerk at the grocery store. It's the fact that a huge percentage of our workforce retired in the last few years.
Yeah.
And that it's COVID related, right? It's people that took early retirement incentives from their employers. It's people that left the workforce for different reasons. And then it's also when you look at the age spread of our country and of our community, the vast majority of the people that have been running these different operations are of retirement age now. You know, so we really need to get realistic about how we're thinking about our staffing in all these different fields.
And you're right. And the issue is there's so many things we have to look at as far as the workplace itself. You know, obviously diversity is very strong, and I'm a big believer in that. But also we have to start looking, and you just nailed it. Many years ago, I did a program, I forget the name of it, for the Department of Justice, because Kathy Hawks, who was the director of the Bureau of Prisons, did a survey and realized that within 3 years, she's probably going to lose, I forget, 60, 70% of her top administrators to retirement, and they weren't grooming people coming up to take those positions. So they went in this big, huge training effort. I'm not sure we shouldn't be doing that now with some things.
Yeah, I mean, organizationally, regardless of what industry you're looking at, it's really difficult for the people in charge to give away information to younger people that are coming up through the ranks, right? There's the natural concern that they're going to make themselves obsolete before they're ready to go. So there's kind of a hoarding of information, I would say. And that's not healthy. Organizationally, that's not healthy. And people at the top, regardless of their age, they need to be thinking proactively about how to do that. Yeah. And you also get, when you look at what younger employees, whether we're talking about Gen X, millennials, or Gen Z, we value institutional knowledge. We value learning and mentoring, and we value those opportunities. And I really think that employers would be surprised to see how favorably those opportunities would go in their favor.
Yeah. And when I was working and I went for promotion, and this happened two or three times, and it was really interesting because I was asked at the promotion board, who have you prepared to replace you?
Right.
We don't ask that question enough. It made a lot of sense to me. And you just said it, mentoring people to take your place. Don't be, this knowledge is power thing that goes with the Model T's. But I really do think that in itself, preparing some people to replace you, one. The other thing you said, and we know from the criminal justice world, it is a very effective methodology, and that's mentoring. I'll tell you, 18 Degrees, they have a mentoring program second to none. Gail out there, and now your former worker friend, Brian House, they do great things. I know some of the mentors, they do great things for kiddos.
Yeah, Brian House is a great addition to 18 Degrees. So sorry to see him leave, but also so excited for him to have this opportunity that he has at 18 Degrees. And he's doing great things for the community, and he really understands the work that he's doing, and he has the heart to go with it, right? He's an incredible experience. He's an incredible human, and he's an incredible coworker, also a deeply compassionate person. Mentoring, though, I think it's easy for people who haven't been involved in it to just think that it's, you pair some people up, you give kids a good person to hang out with, and the rest falls into place. That's not how it works. There's so much more that goes into it. And actually, after I graduated from my undergrad, that was one of my first jobs, was I helped to create a mentoring program in Holyoke.
Oh, cool.
And it was for kids 18, actually they were 16 to 21, and they had all left the traditional school system. And some of it was by choice. To be frank, they were expelled, or they left, and then other ones were expelled, and it wasn't by choice, right? For a variety of different reasons. Some were law enforcement involved. Others just fell on hard times, and they got into a little bit of trouble, right? But what I found during that was, the importance of tailoring the mentorship to what that youth was looking for.
Yeah.
And then the pairings that we made that were successful, you saw such a difference in the youth almost immediately, right? Yeah. Like they met somebody who saw them and were able to speak their language to get them through whatever it was they were encountering. And a significant number of them ended up going back, getting their GEDs, and enrolling in community college. It was a really great program.
Going back to my old life, working with violent youthful offenders, one of the key things, and I tell parents this too, and nobody, it's more getting more and more difficult today with these things here, these here. Listen. Really listen. and hear what the kiddo's saying. I'll give you an example, then we got to go to break. Years ago, my son, they speak in code, you know, and if you're not paying attention, you missed the code. But my son said one time, I'll never forget it, I was reading the paper, and he said, he was on the phone, he said, Dad, I said, what? He said, I can't go out tonight, can I? No, that was a standard answer. That was a code. That's the answer he wanted. Then I heard him say, oh, no, I can't go. My father won't let me. So I was a heavy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when he finished on the phone, I said, what was all that about? He goes, well, there's a situation going on. Some of the people going, I just didn't want to be around. And I didn't want to hurt the people, the person's feeling.
Yep.
But that's when I learned, and I've used that example. Really, you have to put the damn phone down and listen. I mean, go out to eat because, you know, there's only two of us. So sometimes we go out to eat. And we watch families, and they're everybody's like this. Nobody's talking.
Yeah. It's a strange thing that we've encountered since cell phones became as prevalent as they are. It's a whole new circumstance that has changed the fabric of our relationships fundamentally. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when I was a kid, all growing up, 5 o'clock was sacrosanct. You were at the stable. It was dinner time. And don't be dilly-dallying, as my father used to say. What were you, dilly-dallying? You know?
So much of it, too, is modeling. I mean, in our house, even before the baby, we don't have phones on the table during dinner. If we go out with friends, most of the time I leave my phone in the car. I don't need it, but I can't say that that's true for most of the people we dine with.
And
now with our daughter, I notice, she's only 8 months, but she notices what a phone is. Like, she notices there's this box that people have, and she's very curious about it.
Yeah.
I'm trying my best to keep it out of her sight, but it's a weird thing to navigate.
Well, yesterday I was in the Big Y, and there's two different people with their kids in a carriage, and they gave the kids the phone.
Oh.
It is definitely a new way of life. We're going to take a break. I just think the world of this lady. She is a mom. She's a professional. She's just the all-around person of her age. And she's on our city council. And I think that's a great thing because I watch the city council and the subcommittees and the school committee and the school committee. So why? Because I don't have a life. But it's amazing the amount of work that she puts in to being a city councilor. And we'll talk about that when we come back. This is Dina Lampiazzi. She's a city councilor. She's a mom. She's a partner. She's just a good person. And I so enjoy interviewing her. We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 on your FM dial, simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301. We'll be back in just about a minute. Please stay tuned. More to come.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon here on WTBR FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community Action Council. BCAC is in need of licensed contractors to service low-income clients who are in need of insulation and heating upgrades, offering a consistent project pipeline, quick payment turnaround, and more. Contact Julie for more information at 413-418-3664.
Missed an episode of your favorite show? Have no fear, because we have podcasts. Type in WTBRFM.com/podcast on your favorite browser and search for your favorite show. It's that simple.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBRFM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
And now back to the Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon on WTBRFM. Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we're back. That lady you see there, her name is Dina Guiel-Lampiazzi. She is a Pittsfield City Councilor. She represents Ward 4?
Six.
Six, that's right. I know that. We're talking about, we talked about trash, and I'm going to talk about it again. No more trash talk. About trash. We can trash talk, but not about trash. We talked about the police station, and that has to get going yet, or that can be the next trash situation. We keep kicking this can down the road. But now there's so many other things coming up, just to get by this post COVID. I got to tell you a thing. I had a call to state office this morning, and they're still working from home because of the pandemic. What?
No.
What? You better get back to where the heck is the oversight? I feel sorry for the people who have had to work throughout the COVID when it was at the top of its game. I do part-time work at UCP. Our people delivered care in the home, never missed a day. And initially, we had a hard time getting protective clothing because we weren't considered health care. So, let's get by this, huh? Let's get back to work, people.
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, there is a conversation to be had about is more remote work helpful to employees, and is it beneficial to the employer, right? So right. That's one conversation. The state under Governor Baker, there was an order to reduce essentially like the office footprint of state employees. Right. So even like in my day job, I just negotiated a new RFP because we have to get a new space. And part of what we ran into was, you have this many employees, can we cut the desks down to this number? And we're like, no, that doesn't work for our type of agency.
No.
So after some back and forth, they ended up getting a pass for agencies like ours to not have to do that. But I have friends and family that work in other parts of state government, and they are working largely from home.
Yeah.
But to say that it's related to the pandemic is a whole different topic, right? Yes. Like if there's a decision to shift because we don't want to be, paying for these spaces when people can be equally productive from home, that's different. But this idea that we can't go to work because of COVID, we have a vaccine. You could still wear a mask if you want to. The world is at least here now. We're back on our feet, and we need to keep moving forward. It's not acceptable for it to be doing that anymore.
Yeah, and I will tell you too. Who is judging, Who's evaluating the real productivity of people working from home?
Right.
I just say that, and I think. You're right. There are some jobs you can work from home and you can be very, very productive.
Sure.
But there are too many jobs that have to interface with the public and their problems. People don't go to the registry because they have no better place to go. They go because they have a need or a problem or a concern. And when they were working from home, it was like, wow.
There's that. There's also, not everybody thrives in a home office setting.
Oh.
Right. And there's the idea of like, what paper documents do you want going home? There's all of that to consider in this teleworking world. I think there's a place for it in a lot of industries, but to your point, using COVID as a reason to continue working from home, I don't buy it.
I said to the Polish princess, you gotta be kidding me. That dog doesn't hunt anymore. I mean, really and truly. Go to the grocery store, go somewhere, anywhere, and you're gonna see people without masks, go to church. I mean, you're right. I don't wanna belabor it, but I wish that the powers to be in the legislature would say, that's it, get back to work. Especially, agencies that deal with people on a daily basis as problem solvers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and there's a danger too in this, you know, decentralizing, where we're losing connection with our place of employment, we're losing connection with our employees, with our coworkers. And that fundamentally changes, I believe that fundamentally changes satisfaction, right? The idea of not having to go to work and just work from your couch or your office, it sounds appealing until you realize that you then are reducing your communication with the world significantly.
Socialization. Look at what they're saying about everything now. They're saying how, like, this disease, the R, whatever it is, that went through your house. They're saying that because kids weren't in school and kids building up natural immunity because they were home, as soon as they went back, they go, boom.
Yeah.
And that whole, so, I mean, fortunately for the Polish princess and I, even when we were confined to quarters, we went out sometimes 2-3 times a day for a little walk just in the neighborhood. And yes, we kept distance when you'd see people and all this malarkey and wear masks. But the desocialization, and I'm really worried about the kids. Will they ever catch up? I don't. I'm not a kid educator.
This group of young people and students that, you know, these last two, now we're going to honestly say it's been affected by 3 years probably, right? Yeah. How is that going to affect them in the long term of life? And can they catch up? There's not only the lessons from the classroom, and some households did a great job at, like, making up other kinds of education that I think maybe we're missing, right? But yeah, it's a lot that we have to navigate as a society, and making sure that our community and our children can communicate with each other and can socialize. That's a huge aspect of success in life, is the ability to communicate and to socialize.
Yeah. And how much of that has been lost?
Right.
You know, I mean, we talked before about just the phones. Think of that. I mean, people don't talk to each other. My favorite foreign story is this, the old Taconic. Well, I was going to the radio station one day, and he had to walk down this hallway, and these two girls, they were there every morning. And I finally one morning said to them, you know, who are you texting to? You're there every morning. She said, her. She was right across the hall from her, the hallway. I said, why don't you just talk to her? He goes, oh, we don't talk. I think we both have someone who's a millennial, I believe. We both know. And I think he's a big one into text. I won't mention his name. He's
okay.
You know who I think.
I think I do. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a big texter. And I just assume pick up the phone and say, hey, Dina, can you do A, B, and C? You know?
Right. I'm the same way. And I'm actually very close with that person. And I don't text a lot. All of my friends know that, like, I'll send a text very to the point. What are you doing Saturday? Got a babysitter? You want to go to dinner?
Yeah.
Maybe a funny story from my day here and there, but I'm not communicating about my day, about life, through text messaging. It's not what I do, right? But it's funny, like, there are other people who, when I call them, that are in my, I'm also a millennial, but I'm what they consider an elder millennial.
You're an elder millennial.
I'm an elder millennial. But when I call my friends, I do have friends that, like, text more, and as soon as they answer, it undoubtedly will sound something like, hello?
Yeah.
Or like, they're concerned, like, is something wrong? Why is she calling me? Why isn't she texting me?
Yeah.
It's really funny. And I have cousins that are, you know, a decade younger than me and down. And when I call them, it's like, panic. Why are you calling me? Why are you calling and not, with them, it's more, why are you calling and not FaceTiming? Why didn't you start off with a FaceTime? It's all these different intergenerational ways of communicating that are really interesting to navigate.
Interestingly enough, and then we'll move on, FaceTiming. We never FaceTimed. Like, first of all, I didn't know how to do it. And but now with the baby, my new grandbaby, with a grandson, we're FaceTiming a lot more than we ever did. And it's just so cool.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying. And I often wonder, too, are we losing our ability to communicate verbally? And because I know people who have gotten real angry at something that was emailed and they just read it wrong. I don't know if you've experienced that, and texting too.
Yeah.
You know, they read something into it that wasn't there.
So that is a problem with communicating through text and email, right? It's the voice that you read with isn't always the voice that the person intended to have. And, you know, the flip side of that is that you create a world where you're constantly wondering if there's another meaning, right? Rather than just being able to pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Hey, I got your email.
Yeah, well, and you know.
You seem frustrated. Are you frustrated? Can we talk about it? No, I'm not frustrated. Great.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or I thought that was, your email was very short. Well, yeah, I was just asking you how the weather was, where you're at. What,
right.
You're right, the Gettysburg Address, you know, but I think, yeah, well, I can't even put myself in the same, or the Polish princess and I in the same category as you guys, because we just don't understand it, you know, and so my thing is, if I don't understand it, I don't play with it. I posted something one time and I couldn't get it down because I spelled a word wrong, and I must have gotten 30 email. Hey, you spelled that word wrong. I know.
That's the worst.
I wrote it at 4 in the morning. But so the challenging, we got a big, I guess the campaign has already started from what I read in the Eagle. I will make this announcement. I want Dina to be the first to know. I will not be running for anything. I now, at my age, run from things. But a lot of people are talking about running. And I'm saying 6 or 8 people over the past month have told me they're thinking about running for city council.
That's great.
I think it is. But, I mean, understand what it is. It's really a commitment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really important to be, you know, as a city councilor, I try my hardest to go into every meeting without preconceived ideas about how do I say this? Preconceived ideas about other people's intentions.
Right.
Right. That's, your intentions have nothing to do with me. What has to do with me right now as a counselor is what's before me, whether it be an ordinance or a petition or communication from the mayor, whatever it is. There's no, you know, this idea of like not having to do your research.
Yeah.
Is problematic.
Yeah.
And there isn't, you know, I think it's fun doing the research, it's fun communicating with department heads, all of that is a big part of the job. And there's you know, this week's agenda is, I think it's only 125 pages, but that's 125 dense pages that, you know, you have to find time to prepare sometime between Thursday or Friday when the agenda comes out and your meeting on Tuesday. You've got to talk to department heads in the meantime. You know, you got to kind of iron out all of your questions and refer back to meetings in the past and do your homework.
Yeah, it's obvious to the casual observer. That's me in between naps in my recliner watching the city council meeting. Who is prepared and who isn't?
Right.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't take a study in observation. Just by some of the questions counselors ask, you understand, wait a minute, that I don't read it all like you do. I skim it, but I pick enough of it just to, you know what you're going to be talking about. I think it's important. Especially when I do this kind of a deal on the radio, I want to be factual about, you know, there's enough misinformation out there without me adding to it.
You want to be factual, especially in the age of social media.
Yeah.
And like these different blogs that are out there, there's so much misunderstanding, I will say, or misinformation that you can find on these different threads. It's really important as counselors that if we have a genuine question, fine, ask that. But, you know, the gotcha kind of question, that's the kind of stuff it's really not productive. But also going into a meeting, being prepared with the best questions possible. We have sometimes, how many items do we have this week? We have an agenda of 22 items, which is incredibly light. Compared to some agendas, right? Sometimes we have like 50, 60. But you have all these different items and you want to go in with really consolidated questions if you're going to take mic time. It's everybody's best interest,
right?
It's the viewers at home's best interest. It's your colleague's best interest. And there's the difference between, you know, asking already known information.
Yeah.
Right. And you can do that for educational purposes or asking a question that's going to really inform yourself and your colleagues and the decision process. And that there's a fundamental difference there.
I look because I've been doing this a long time. I look for respect for the city employees and fellow counselors. I look for preparedness by the counselors because you're representing me and all of us. It's a representative form of government. If you're not going to be prepared, please tell me and I won't vote for you again. Because I think some of the things that have been slid down the road, kicked down the road, whatever you say, that was because some of the people weren't prepared to do it. And I think Counselor Persip, who I think the world of too, he made a thing for a couple of meetings, and you made it too earlier today. And that is, we have to vote on some things that will not be popular, but we have to vote on. We have to deal with it. And I think in so many cases through the years, not just now, but through the years, people have said, I don't want to do that. That'll make people mad. I'm not going to pick their garbage up on the corner. I'm not going to. Well, you know what? We're at the stage now that the people that are left on the council are going to have to make some kind of a decision.
And no, it's really
I hope they don't pay a price for it.
It's the job description, right? Thanks. We as counselors need to go in there, and anybody who runs need to go in there understanding the jurisdiction of a city council. I feel that in the last couple of years, you've gotten really bogged down on things that we as a council cannot actually affect.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a lot of discussions that were outside of our jurisdiction. Petitions that were outside of our jurisdiction. And I would like to get back to a place where we focus on the work that we are there to do and that we can do. The rest of it is bright lights and sideshows, to be honest with you.
Exactly. No, you're 100% right. And sometimes it's just, I don't know what it is. I think some people talk to hear themselves talk. The one thing that, you know, you have a counselor, a lawyer that represents the city, and now you have a lawyer, maybe two on the council. And if you guys want to have a legal debate, have it on your own time, because I try to get to bed by 8:30. And when you're having this debate, you know, submit briefs. I said that one time to somebody recently. If they're going to do that, why don't you just have them submit briefs and they can read it and come back on another day? Listen, we got a couple minutes left. You want a holiday greetings to anybody? This is going to air in the morning, so.
Oh, it's airing tomorrow?
You betcha.
All right. You know, just happy holidays to everybody in Ward 6 and throughout the city. Stay safe. Take care of each other. You know, there's so much to be thankful this year, and it's a beautiful time.
It is a beautiful time, and you're going to have a wonderful time. Because it's baby's first Christmas. Lots of pictures, please. I don't mean to be a bossy, but lots of pictures, please.
We are trying to keep her off of the social media.
No, I don't have social media, but you can email me one or two.
I'll send you some pics. I'll send you some updates.
And I'm going to send you some of William Hudson.
Sounds like a deal.
The other thing is, let me just say this, and I mean this sincerely. Thank you for all the hard work that you put into your council seat and your council responsibilities. And I mean that because I watched the play. You're like, well, I forget what the commercial was, but when you speak, people listen. Because you don't speak unless you have something to say. And that to me, you know, I wish some of your other colleagues had followed it. But I take my hat off to you. If I had a hat on, I would.
Well, we all have different styles up there. And I think in some ways it complements.
Yeah.
But I thank you for those kind words. I really do. And it's appreciated.
Well, you're prepared. You're very smart. And the other thing is, you care. And if people can't read that, you're not, it's just not a job. You, everything you talk about, you sincerely care about. It's just,
this is our community. We got to care.
What do you think?
That's
I do
simple.
No. Yeah. I just can't say enough. Thank you. I can't say thank you enough for the effort you and so many others on the council put in. And I don't want to start naming them because if I forget somebody, I'll get hate mail. I get hate mail anyhow, but more hate mail. Thank you for being on. God, and to you and your beautiful family and all of my listeners, God bless. And this time of the year especially, let's take care of each other. There's a lot of people who aren't in very good shape for this holiday season. So give to your food banks, give to your clothing banks. One thing I never pass, never, is the Salvation Army pot. Because I'll tell you, when we were in Vietnam, when I was in Vietnam and others, Salvation Army was there for us. And all they asked you to do is take a little bit of a New Testament. That's all they asked, but they would give you coffee and stuff like that. Things from home. Be well, my friend, and feel better. And I will catch up. I'll be watching you on TV.
All right, we'll see you.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for coming on, Dina.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, everybody. God bless. Talk to you soon. I'll keep on.